You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we'll hear from a Wisconsin poet laureate who recently won the Brittingham Prize in Poetry.
Now, think back to a time when you were trying to learn something. Middle school math, maybe. The new software at work. Throwing a curveball. How quickly did you learn how to do it? Was it easy or a struggle? What helped you figure it out? What made it more frustrating?
Our next guest says there's a good chance you could have learned it better. In a new book, he shares recent research on how people learn, what works and what doesn't. And he shares advice that we can use when we learn stuff at school, work, and in our daily lives.
Ulrich Boser joins us now. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. His new book is Learn Better: Mastering the Skills for Success in Life, Business, and School, or How to Become an Expert in Just About Anything. Ulrich, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much. Happy to join you.
Well, people may be surprised by the idea that we can learn how to learn. Is that true? We can learn to learn better?
We can definitely learn how to learn better. There are simply a lot of myths about learning. People believe that people have learning styles, that they are visual learners or auditory learners, and it turns out not to be true. I see people using highlighters all the time in business and in schools, and it turns out there's actually very little evidence behind the highlighters. And there is evidence for some other approaches, and there's a lot of new research about how we can improve our ability at gaining new skills in more effective ways.
Now, before we get to some of the practical advice, what does it mean to learn something? Does it mean we've memorized a bunch of facts, or we've learned concepts, or how facts interrelate? How are we defining what it means to learn as we learn how to learn?
Sure. When we learn something, for the most part, we want to become experts, and that means, our ability to solve new problems. And in the book, I talk actually about the car talk guys. That's familiar, of course, to
sure.
A lot of NPR listeners. And, when you look past their jokes and goofy nature, they did something that was really very impressive, right? Someone would call in about a Buick and say that there was some white smoke and maybe an odd noise. And just from that, right, they never saw the Buick. They were able to diagnose the problem. And that's really why we, whether we're learning middle school math or, knitting, we want to be able to learn, have these skills to solve problems and use them when we need to.
One thing we hear a lot, this was big a while back, the idea of 10,000 hours. You want to become an expert in something, put in 10,000 hours of practice at it. I learned from your book, though, it isn't so much how much practice as is it the right kind of practice? What's the right kind of practice and learning to develop those skills?
It's interesting because time doesn't always equal learning. There are all sorts of things like handwriting, for instance, that we do a lot, less than perhaps in the past, but we don't necessarily get better at it. Driving is a wonderful example. Myself, as well as many of my friends and colleagues, drive about as well as they did when they were 18. And, so what makes people get better at something? And, what turns out to be true, what the research makes clear is that feedback and monitoring are really, really important. I saw this myself. I played a lot of, basketball. On a league with some friends, and I noticed that even among the kind of middle-aged beer belly guys, I was particularly middle-aged and beer bellied, and I decided I should hire a basketball tutor. And what was amazing to me is that I was writing a book on learning. I've been writing about education since the late 90s, and I was even surprised at just how helpful it was to get that feedback immediately improved my game, and it fits with a lot of the research that, how we practice is often more important than what we practice or even the hours that we put in.
Talking to Ulrich Boser, his new book is called Learn Better. He looked at the science of learning. He's sharing some advice on how to get better at acquiring skills and knowledge. Ulrich, one thing that was interesting to me was sort of the window of opportunity you talk about, the sweet spot. A lot of people will either, when they're learning something, go over the stuff that's really easy, or bite off more than they could chew, go to something that's too hard. You say the key is find that stuff that's just pushing us a little more each time. How do we find that sweet spot?
Yeah, researchers talk about this idea of desirable difficulty, that it's important that learning is a little bit difficult for us. And look, I'm like most people, I want things actually to be easy. It's just simply more fun that way. But pushing ourselves a little bit out of our comfort zone is important, and we see this in all sorts of areas. So there's a lot of research now that quizzing yourself, self-testing yourself, is a great way to learn. It's a good way to learn facts by bringing them out of memory. You get a better sense of them. And it's actually a good way to develop a richer sense of expertise, because you're often making connections. And, what's key there, though, is that it's making learning a little bit difficult for ourselves. We don't want to go too far, of course, and get overwhelmed. But this idea that, learning isn't necessarily always going to be fun. We want it to be just a little bit hard for ourselves.
You mentioned learning not always fun, and you break down some steps to think about. And the first one you share is the idea of value. We have to want to learn. How do we, as educators, maybe as parents and as learners, assign a value to that thing we're going to learn to motivate us to do it in the first place?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because ultimately, it's very hard to learn something if you don't want to learn it. We see that in kids. We see that in ourselves. And what I found fascinating about this research is, just telling people that something is important is not enough. And, to a degree, we know this. We all get these emails, from our HR department that says, we should worry about our 401ks. And certainly a lot of us as parents might tell that to our kids. This is going to be important someday. But it turns out that making this type of meaning is really a one-way street. It goes from the student to the material. And a lot of research now shows that, just giving students a piece of paper and saying, why is this math going to be important for you, is a way to spark interest. Because it's a way to make that material meaningful for the students themselves.
Let's talk about trying to learn from a book or a text. You mentioned one misconception is the idea that highlighting works. Apparently it doesn't. Rereading, reading over and over again, apparently, isn't the ticket either. So when we're trying to learn from a textbook or an instruction manual or whatever, what's the best way to make sure we're getting something out of that?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Highlighters, not much evidence for underlining, too, which is, a practice that I and many other people have used for a long time. Very little evidence for. What is more important is, talking yourself through the material, asking yourself questions about the material, and really sort of, trying to make some connections, some ties to the material is a far more effective way, according to researchers, about learning from texts. And yet, we see these other practices really done all the time. And what's key is that we're really producing our knowledge when we're engaging in that way. We are really mentally doing, and that turns out to be far more effective.
Yeah, a recurring theme in the book is the idea of connecting what we're learning to stuff we already know, whether that's in the same field or not. So making analogies to things we've already known or experienced helps us learn this new, more difficult thing.
Yeah, analogies are a funny thing. We tend not to think about them all that much. For me and many others, they're sort of associated with IQ tests. But, analogies end up being really important as a way to gain expertise. And when I mentioned the Car Talk guy earlier, right? What they were able to do when someone would call in, they were able to use an analogy, right? They wouldn't know about your Buick and the smoke that it produced, but they thought back to other cars that they had worked on over the years and used an analogy to help them solve that problem. And, we can do this ourselves by when we're engaging in a topic, looking for more of a systems approach, not trying to learn a single fact, but how that fact might relate to other facts. Now, I found this, really interesting, and talked to researchers who had studied this idea in academic fields like math and history, and I thought, I should use something perhaps more relatable to my own life. And so I took a wine pairing class, and I found it really interesting, right? When you start thinking about a sweet wine and how it relates to spicy food, you get a much richer sense of what does it mean to be a sweet wine? Why does the sweet wine cut against the food? And, that was a more analogous way of thinking about wine. And I think I took a lot more from the class than if I'd simply either tasted a few glasses of wine or read about it in a book, thinking about its relationships, its analogies to to other tastes and wines.
Ulrich Boser is with us. His new book is called Learning Better. He's sharing the latest research on learning, how to learn, and some of the right and wrong ways to learn things at work, at school, and beyond.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What works for you and what doesn't when you're learning? Is there something you're trying to learn, a skill that you're maybe trying to acquire? Do you need some advice from our guest? Or if you teach people as a teacher, a trainer, a coach, or a parent, what have you learned about the process of learning? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Vera.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And we continue our conversation now with Ulrich Boser, the author of Learn Better. He says we can learn how to learn. And he's sharing advice on how to gain skills and knowledge at work, at school, and in our daily lives.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. When you've learned something in your life, maybe at school, maybe a new job, maybe a hobby, a sport, what worked for you? What did you struggle with? And was there a breakthrough where you approached it in a different way and all of a sudden it clicked? Call in now, 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to our callers. Mary is with us in Greenfield. Mary, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering if your speaker had any experience in dealing with the whole learning philosophy of whole brain learning. We've been reading some books around here. A couple actually put out a few books on, one book is called No Drama Discipline. And it's basically talking about teaching kids how to learn, how to retain information by their developmental age, by brain biology, as well as certain experiences. But it does mostly concentrate on having connections with the person, the parents, whoever is in charge of that, in a more loving, connecting kind of a way.
Mary, thanks a lot for that call. Ulrich, have you encountered this idea, whole brain learning, in the past or in your research? And also, you can talk about the role of emotions in learning. You're right about that.
Yeah, the whole brain learning is interesting. I'm not hugely familiar with it. But what I find interesting about, you know, the way that people talk about learning and really a lot of other things where they say, you know, it changes your brain or you're using your whole brain. I mean, everything uses your whole brain. Everything changes your brain. You know, even driving your car to work, a task that most of us do without much thinking, you know, in some small way changes your brain. And, you know, I think people, for all sorts of reasons, you know, should be a little bit reluctant sometimes around these neuromyths. But when it comes to something like your emotions in learning, I think there is a lot of evidence behind it. And to a degree, we know this ourselves. If you're really stressed, if you're really anxious, it's hard to acquire a skill. You're thinking about, you know, whatever it is that might, you know, hurt you or, you know, what might happen tomorrow. And so, you know, being calm, having moments where you're connected with other people is really centrally important. It's something that we forget, certainly in a lot of schools. But I think, you know, we as individuals forget that a lot, too. What's also interesting is that our bodies themselves are very important, and we can offload, I found this in my own research, a lot of evidence for it, you know, offload memories to our hands. I've started to do this in speaking engagements. You know, if I want to remember to thank the host, I will make sure to use a specific gesture to do that. And, you know, what we forget at a really high level is that, you know, our body and our brains, we think of them as two separate systems, but they're very interwoven, and that helps explain why we need to have connections with others. We need to feel calm and safe when we want to gain a skill, whether that's in the office or at a school.
Mary, thanks for that call. We'll go next to Julie in Cambridge. Julie, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Julie?
Well, I'm in the process of studying for some licensing exams. They're pretty lengthy tests. They're several hours in length. And so I've been poring over books for a week now in the library, trying to regain and retain the information. I wondered if he had any pointers on, a lot of it are going to be multiple choice types of tests. Does he have any input into the best way to study for something like that or to take a test like that?
Julie, thanks. Ulrich, any standardized test prep advice?
Yeah, you know, this is standardized tests, have their own issues. But setting those aside, there are a couple of tips that I would give. One is, it is very easy to forget. We forget at a very regular rate. And so to make sure that you space out your learning over time is really important, especially when it comes to factual knowledge. So, what does that mean kind of practically? Anything that you can do to make sure that you revisit materials over a long period of time. There's some good software out there like Anki that can help you do that. And, this spacing out over time just occurs because we forget and forget so regularly. And people who've used these tools to space our learning out over time have shown tremendous effects. In the book, I talk about a guy named Roger Craig. Roger was a guy who just, loved games, any type, baseball, football, Jeopardy, chess. And so he decided, he was going to compete at Jeopardy, and he used this spaced approach. First, he developed some software on his own, and then he used someone else's software to spread out his learning of these Jeopardy trivia facts over time, really making sure he did everything to do the opposite of cramming. The first time he went on to Jeopardy, he blew away Ken Jennings' record using this research to memorize these trivia. When he went to bed that night, he was convinced that Alex Trebek would not invite him on the next day because he had done so well. And really what he did was use this very simple fact. We forget, we easily forget these facts, especially for things like licensure exams where, it's some nuanced detail. And, the more that you can spread your learning out over time so that you have that material in your long-term memory when you need it, especially for these types of exams that aren't necessarily testing your higher order thinking, but really sort of, can you recall an obscure fact, whether it's, for a real estate licensure exam or a police officer exam. Spacing out your learning is one of the fail-safe ways to improve your performance in that way.
Julie, thanks for the call. Good luck on the test. We're talking to Ulrich Boser. His new book is called Learn Better. Back to your calls now. John is with us in Milwaukee. John, hi.
Hi, it's Jeff Kleiber, K-L-A-I-B-E-R.
I think we have a bad connection there. We lost him. Okay, we'll go next to Mark in Chippewa Falls. Mark, hi.
Hi, how are you? And thanks for having this topic on. I taught high school for 30 years in Wisconsin. And the more I went down the line, the more I knew that learning how to learn was far more the point than cramming everything in. Number one, there's no end of facts in the world, so you can't learn everything anyway. And particularly the way schools are now driven by standardized testing, it's just really a shame because kids are getting turned off to it. And the example I use with people is, listen, do you remember anything about your final exam in English when you were a senior in high school? And everybody says, no. I said, you were told it was incredibly important, right? Well, why wasn't it so important that you can't remember anything?
Mark, thanks a lot for that call. So Mark, a teacher, is saying the main thing is teaching how to learn. And Ulrich, you wrote about that you had challenges in school, and looking back, you realized that one of the challenges is you hadn't learned how to learn.
Yeah, I mean, the skill is incredibly important. Every time that I get a new phone, I have to learn a new skill. When I, at work, for all of us, trying to develop new, ways of looking at things become incredibly important. And so this skill of learning, is, incredibly important, and we often do it so wrong. So people, love to block their practice so that, maybe you devote one day all to one practice, and then the next day you devote to a second practice. So if I was playing basketball, for instance, maybe I would spend a whole day shooting three-pointers and then the next day shooting foul shots. Research is very clear, dating back decades, that mixing up our practice is a much better way to gain a skill like basketball or math. And so it'd be much better off, in my example, doing mixed training, so mixing up the three-pointers and the foul shots. And, what this, I think, more broadly underscores is that we haven't given people these skills of, how to get better. And, oftentimes they're hard. They're things that we struggle with ourselves.
Let's take one more caller. Bonnie is on the line in Verona. Bonnie, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering the best way to learn a foreign language if you don't have any access to native speakers or of the language you're learning. Thanks very much.
The bane of my academic career. Ulrich, thoughts on picking up a foreign language when you're not able to immerse yourself with foreign language speakers?
Yeah, certainly immersing yourself with foreign language speakers is, you know, an incredibly powerful way to gain a skill. You know, I think what's important is, you know, when you are starting out in a subject, and this is true for, you know, learning how to dive or getting better at geometry, it's going to be really important that you master the basics so you have some fluency to build on. When it comes to foreign language, that's going to mean, you know, starting off by really practicing, you know, basic vocabulary. And then as you, you know, get better, you know, starting to think about grammar and pronunciation. And I think, you know, sometimes we have this conversation about learning where people are like, oh, well, all the information is on the internet. You can just Google it. Don't worry about learning knowledge. And we need to, I think, scale that back a little bit. Knowledge turns out to be very important to learning, and foreign languages are often a great example. Mastering that basic vocabulary is a great way to start out. But then in the end, you know, you're going to want to be able to give that language a test drive. And so you are going to need then to immerse yourself or at very least, you know, speak with some people who are experts in that specific language or field.
Bonnie, thanks a lot for that call. And Ulrich, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was an honor.
We've been talking to Ulrich Boser. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He's the author of the book Learn Better, Mastering the Skills for Success in Life, Business, and School, or How to Become an Expert in Just About Anything. You can find out some more about what he's had to say about learning. We've got a link at the Central Time Facebook page. While you're there, let us know, what are you learning right now? A new hobby, a new sport, new job skills, you're in school, the new class? Let us know. Central Time Facebook page.